In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about predictions for 2018. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 370. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
We're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Rob?
You know, it's I was reflecting on the past couple of months, and I feel like I'm coming out of kind of a rough patch. If you go over and listen to Zen Founder, which I believe came out last Friday, Sherry and I talked through some personal stuff that had been, is going on with us. And you already know about this. I talked a little bit about it at MicroConf Europe. And I realized that kind of stuff, like you can become the frog in the pot of boiling water where just slowly you descend into like stress and chaos. And as I've come out of that, I was just looking back and thinking like how thankful I am for so many things right now and how I guess thankful I am that I'm not where I was a month ago, you know, like coming out of dark times. And I mean, it was both personal stuff and, you know, even at work, just kind of, I don't know, just you hit a certain point, some months, some weeks are just hard. And it's hard to want to show up every day, and it's hard to deal with whatever it is, you know, the queues haven't backed up for a while, but just, there's just stress, you know, building a software company and running a big team and hiring people. And yeah. So I don't know. I don't know that I have, other than that's what's been going on with me. I was just thinking about it today of like, man, I really feel positive and excited, and I'm like really happy right now. And it's just such a contrast to what I was feeling, you know, even 3 or 4 short weeks ago. And part of that was getting away, you know, was going to Europe. Even running MicroConf Europe wasn't stressful. It was super, I had a great time there, and I was there with my kids, and Sherry joined us. And then when I came back, the reentry week was tough. But aside from that, like, I feel like things are on the upswing. So hopefully heading into the end of the year and beginning of next, it can continue to feel that way.
I have to laugh to myself every time I hear that analogy of the frog and the pot of boiling water, because I've used it myself. But if you look into it, that's actually not true. If you put a frog in a pot of hot water and you slowly turn up the temperature, it will jump out. It's not that it doesn't realize it, but it's a great analogy because it makes sense to everybody. But yeah, like I think that's kind of I'll say par for the course. Like everybody goes through that on occasion, but it sucks to be there, you know, and the contrast between where you hopefully end up eventually is quite striking, I'll say. And it's nice to be able to kind of move past that.
Yeah. And I think move past it and then be better equipped to recognize it early and to deal with it as best you can. Cause these are always going to happen, right? Whether it's 1 week every couple months, whether it's 1 month every couple quarters, like you're just going to have these down times. And if it's high stress time, if you're negotiating the sale of your company or you're in super high growth or there's a competitor who's really pissing you off and trolling you, like this can be constant for months. And it's trying to figure out, how do I go on this journey and deal with hard things and not let it poison the rest of my life, you know, or negatively impact the rest of my relationships and my ability to just go and have fun.
Yeah. And that can be hard, especially if your income is just like tied so much to your business and your business is the cause of the stress. Cause like there's almost no getting away from it at that point. Cause it's not like a 9-to-5 job where you can just go in, clock in at the end of the day, you just walk away and all the problems are not yours to deal with. It's like, it intrudes on your life to some extent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this relates back to the listener question we had last week where he says, my emotions are tied to my business. How do I get away from that? And our answer was kind of like, well, you do the best you can, but it'll probably always will be. I mean, I think that's my short answer to that. How about you? What's going on?
So my oldest is playing basketball right now, and they had to do a fundraiser. And it was interesting because as part of the fundraiser, they're basically just standing outside of a store and asking people for donations. So I took him aside at one point, like after he'd kind of gotten the hang of it and basically asking people for money. And I was like, here, let me teach you the art of the upsell here. So kind of worked with him for a couple of minutes. And I was unfortunately not like paying attention because I was working with one of the other kids at the time when he actually did it. But he upsold some woman on a hug to get like some extra money from her for a donation.
That's cool. That's awesome. Bravo.
So I was told by the coach, he's like, you know, he did it flawlessly. It was like perfect execution, everything. He listened, followed all the advice and everything. So, and he only did it 3 times. It wasn't like, you know, we were there for, I think, an hour and a half, and he didn't do it like all the time. He only did it 3 times, but every time it worked. It was really good.
Like father, like son. I've seen you.
Yes, I sell deluxe hugs for $2.
I know you do. Yeah, buy this software product, and I will give you a hug. Cool. For me, I also had this interesting experience in the past week. I often talk about we're always hiring because the app is growing quickly, so the team's growing slowly, which is good. It's how we like to do it. But we found a candidate who came highly recommended, and we met with him, and he was the right fit, good personality and everything. But as we moved forward in the actual kind of hiring negotiation process, it quickly became apparent that there were like yellow flags started creeping up, and there were little things. It was like, he's asking for more money than really he should get because he was transitioning careers, you know, transitioning from this role to that role. And it's like, he's asking for the same salary that he had at this other thing that he was had five years of experience in, and is basically becoming like entry-level junior for us. And then it was like, he wanted a title that was actually quite a bit above, you know, that implied that he had years of experience and he actually has 3 months or something. So it was like, that's a really interesting one. And then there were two more things, but it just kept unfolding, and he went from like being this amazing candidate to being, I use the word, I'm disenchanted as these things keep coming. And, you know, to his credit, he has two other companies that are interested in him. And so he's probably going to wind up getting everything he asked for. And that's great. But it showed me there was, particularly the specific way he handled a few things showed me that it wasn't just negotiation. There was a bit of high maintenance or demanding or entitlement, I think is probably the right word. And it struck me that that alone is a deal breaker. Like, even though he checked all the other boxes, he's either a hell yes or he's a no. And he quickly became not a hell yes as these things unfolded.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing. I mean, I guess I'd say, you know, I guess the process isn't complete yet, but I don't know if whether you kind of went through and offered him the job or past that point, but it's easier or better to find those things out in advance as opposed to after they've started working or even a week or two down the road. I mean, sometimes you don't find out for 6 months, but those problems can come up at any time. I remember somebody who I had interviewed at Pedestal Software, and there was another team that had actually interviewed him, and they're like, we think he knows his stuff, but we're not sure. Can you come help us out? And so I went in and basically grilled him on all this Unix stuff because the other team didn't have as much experience with it. And I grilled him, and I remember going back to the management team, and I was just like, he knows his stuff, but he's kind of a jerk. You don't want to hire him. And that was the bottom line. And they're like, okay, let's hire him. I'm like, but wait a second, he's going to be a pain in the ass to work with. And he was, like, he was, it sucked.
I've had that happen before. Yep. At high growth startups where I was like, they're like, does he have technical chops? Yes, but I don't want to work with him. And they're like, that's okay. We can manage that. And they didn't put me with him, but the engineers who worked with him didn't like it at all. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. That was an early indicator to me of like, this was 14 years ago. I remember being like, I don't think this whole funded thing is for me, because if that's what we're doing, like, I'm not going to like my job here, you know?
Right.
You got to, I mean, in my opinion, you need to like the people who you work with, because you just spend too much of your life at your job. So whether you're hiring them yourself or they're just people, you know, if you work at a big company and other people are hiring, it's like, if you don't like your coworkers, I think you need to get out of there. So what are we talking about today?
Well, today we are going to be going through our predictions for 2018. And I think to kick us off, we probably should take a look back at our 2017 predictions and see how we did before we start making other wild ass guesses.
Indeed. And that's just what these are, is wild ass guesses. And about every December, and we've done this for many years, I'd say 5 or 6 at this point. And I went back and listened to a few of our old predictions episode, and it's pretty funny, just pretty funny how the world changes. But keep in mind that when we make predictions in the startup space or in the tech space, but these are not limited to just startups. And we like to have fun with this episode. It's more about entertainment than it is about, these are areas that, you know, to start a business in. Next week or in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be doing our goals episode, where it is truly your and my goals that we set for 2017. We'll review those, and then we'll look ahead at our goals for 2018. And those will be, obviously, there's some personal ones, but there's also startup business specific ones. But for these, you know, again, there are some that are tech related and then others that are just kind of fun ones to think about and talk about.
So with that in mind, let's dive right in. And my first prediction for 2017 was that health insurance rates are going to become a much bigger issue for self-funded companies. And I would say that what are we doing with our scale of, like, is it 0 to 1 to 100 or 0, 1 or 50-50?
1 to 5?
1 to 5, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like 5 is like nailed it. and then one is like completely missed.
All right. So 1 to 5 then. So I would say on this one, I got a 5.
All right.
So I've
in the US specifically, right?
Yes.
Couch that. I think we couched it because the US healthcare system is so messed up, especially for small company. Well, just for everybody, it's messed up, but.
Yep. I mean, I've been hearing people over the past 3 or 4 months where at the beginning of the year, it wasn't so bad, I don't think. And then as the year has kind of progressed, as people start to renew their insurance, I've been hearing people say that in some cases, it's double or triple what the rates were previously or the previous year. And it's just, it's kind of gotten out of control. I don't know what people are doing about it. I'm glad that I renewed back in April, but at the same time, like I'm going to have to renew in next April, and I'm kind of afraid of what is going to end up happening.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm happy. It sounds weird to say I'm happy that I'm working for someone else, that I don't have to deal with this. You know, essentially Drip/LeadPages handles this for me now, and I don't have to administer it. And then they, you know, like a typical, you know, employer with good funds, they cover most of the expense. And it's, I know it's got to be super expensive for them to maintain that. But my first prediction for 2017 was there will be another high profile acquisition in the bootstrapped space. And my idea was that it wasn't going to be someone that sold their app for a 3 to 4x multiple of net profit, but that it was going to be, you know, another kind of Drip-esque acquisition where someone that we know in the microconf spaces got acquired by a big startup.
And how did you do?
As far as I know, this is a 1. I don't know of enough. Do you know of anybody in our space that got acquired?
I know of some, but nothing like at that level.
Yeah. So maybe a 2 or something. I mean, I was on the lower end of being right. I had the impression that, or I was thinking that, you know, there would be a kind of a bigger acquisition, and that really didn't happen.
If I remember correctly, you did say on the episode last year that you didn't have any inside knowledge. It's just what you thought was going to happen.
Yep, that's right.
So my second prediction was that the SaaS bar is going to continue to be harder to reach, which is obviously overly generic, but I kind of couched it by saying that startups are going to start offering a services first based approach, followed by implementing the SaaS once they figure out the process in order to be able to offer those services at scale.
So it's the productized consulting first and then turning into SaaS, right? And I think when you said this prediction, I said, isn't this already happening? Like this was Brian Castle's talk in October of 2016 was about productized service moving to SaaS.
And Craig Hewitt went down this road with Castos as well. So the idea there is really to make it easier for people to host their own podcasts. And they do a lot of the stuff internally with Podcast Motor, where they do all the editing and everything else. But like they basically turned that productized service into more of a SaaS product and offer additional things that's more of a self-serve model than the productized services, which is done for you. And I would say that those are the two that I would say come to mind, but I don't see too many others. I probably have to give myself like a 2, possibly a 3, but I wouldn't say that this was as accurate as I thought it would have been.
Yeah, I'm sure more people are doing it. I know Brian Castle has his productize course, and I'm sure he knows other people who are doing it through that, but you and I just haven't necessarily heard about them or been around them. My second prediction for 2017 was that startup crowdfunding will fizzle out. Lower end startups will use it, but the best startups will continue to use their networks, AngelList, and that kind of stuff. And I'm going to give myself a 4 on this because I don't know that it fizzled out as much as it just has not really taken hold very well. Like it just hasn't had the impact that I thought it would, of people being able to buy small chunks of equity, non-accredited investors being able to buy small chunks of equity. I thought that it would have this big kick early on and then, like I said, fizzle out. And it kind of didn't. I think that there have been several platforms that have launched to facilitate it. And yeah, I don't know, it's kind of shoulder shrug right now, like wait and see. So I think I was mostly, if I removed the fizzle out, I was probably a 5, like startup crowdfunding won't really do much. If I had phrased it that way, I think it'd be much more accurate. Was that your sense as well? Or you think I'm misreading it?
I feel like there was an initial inclination that was going to happen, that people were going to do it a lot. You know, like non-accredited investors were going to be able to throw money in and start funding these companies. But I don't think that the types of businesses that were maybe brought before them were attractive enough for them to say, yes, I'm going to throw my money in.
Cool. That makes sense.
So my third prediction was that more small-scale entrepreneurial meetups are going to be started around the world, and that the entrepreneurship for small-scale businesses is going to pick up steam. I probably don't have a lot of data to back this up, but I would say that I'd give myself a 4 out of 5 on this. I was I heard recently that FemtoConf over in Germany just recently sold out. So congratulations to those guys.
Wait, what?
Did you not hear that?
No. Oh, sold out. That was interesting. I took sold out as not selling all their tickets, but as selling the conference to someone else.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah. I was like, what? You hear the shock on my voice? Okay, sorry. Keep going.
Yes, wrong one.
Wow.
No, sold out as in sold all of their tickets. So I feel like that's going to become not really the model, but like more prevalent over time as people like start these like really small meetups and then grow it. Because I think last year's FemtoConf was only about like 10 or 15 people. And then they went from 10 or 15 to I think around 30 this year. So I just think that there's going to be a trend in that where like you get these really small meetups that start out tiny and then they start to grow just because of the audience that they build and they're growing off their success as opposed to trying to build something where they get like 100 or 200 or 500 people to it the very first year that they start. And it's really just like stair-stepping their way up.
Congrats to you guys. My third prediction for 2017 was that there would be a 20% or more correction in the U.S. stock market. And on a scale of 1 to 5, I give myself a 0. This one, I was so up. Have you heard this expression? I've predicted 5 of the last 2 bear markets. I mean, that's essentially what I've done here. I think like all of us, things seem overvalued, but everyone's been saying this. I know someone who pulled all their money out of the stock market in 2013 or 2014, and they have missed tremendous amounts of gains. Like timing the market is so, so hard, and we all think we can. And it's always just a little bit later. You know, you can't quite outlast the market in terms of the irrationality of it going up or going down. So I would probably say this will happen in 2018, but I'm not going to kind of cheat and use that prediction again. I was dead wrong.
See, I thought you were going to say the 20% market correction was going to be upwards instead of downwards. So I thought you were going to try and cheat here.
That's good. I should have. It corrected from its low.
Yes.
Yeah, it corrected upwards. And my fourth and final prediction for 2017 was that the first consumer purchased package would be legally delivered with unmanned drones somewhere in the world. And I believe, if I recall, that I made this prediction, it was like late November, early December, and that it was within a couple of weeks that this happened. It was even before 2017. Is that your memory?
I think that that's correct. I think that it happened before the year started, and I think we were debating about whether or not you got credit for it because it was not in 2017.
So I would give myself a 5 on this one, even though maybe technically it should have happened 2 weeks later for it to be in 2017. We should call these our predictions from between right now and the end of the following year, but it just, it kind of makes the...
You're just trying to get credit for that one.
It makes the title sound really long. All right, so let's dive into our predictions between now and the end of 2018.
So what's your first prediction, Rob?
I didn't even type this one. So let me read this one. Rob will buy a bunker in the Swiss Alps, establish a micronation with his 11-year-old son as the benevolent dictator. So how did this show up in our outline, Mike?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That's a really good prediction.
Must have been the elves.
Messing with my predictions. All right. So that was a joke prediction. Please don't hold me to it. What's your first one?
So mine is that there's going to be an economic downturn. And I think that it's probably going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be, you know, major, but I think that it's going to be substantial enough that people will notice. It's not going to be like 2008 where the entire economy crashed. But I do think that there is going to be that, you know, you kind of called it for last year, the 20% stock market correction. I feel like that's going to be this year. And I think that it's going to be driven kind of by a lot of the factors around healthcare, and at least in the United States, and then, you know, various policies that are kind of going into effect. I don't see that like a sustained economy is going to be moving forward this coming year. I think that there's bad stuff on the horizon.
So I want to get more specific with this, because when I think of the phrase economic downturn in quotes, I think of like the economy as multiple factors, right? You could say, is that a stock market correction? Is that a recession, which implies a lack of growth of businesses, which don't necessarily, it often causes a stock market correction, but the two can be non-correlated. And that typically also leads to unemployment. And then there's the housing market, which I see as a separate thing. So there's 3 or 4 different things, right? Unemployment, GDP growth, stock market, and housing. And in 2008, 2009, they all plummeted. But in 2000, the housing market took a little hit, but it wasn't that bad. And, you know, on and on and on. So what do you mean when you say economic downturn? Let's define it just, and then let's update this so we know next year, like whether you were accurate. Because if it's any one of those 4, then that's a pretty broad prediction. But if you're saying it's like, I don't know, 3 of the 4 or something.
I think it's going to be a couple of them. One, I think that like there's going to be a lot of small services businesses that end up going out of business, partly because of regulation, but partly because they're just not going to be able to make ends meet. They've got other things that they've got to adhere to in terms of like the tax laws and health insurance and things like that. And I think that that's going to have a pretty big impact on them. And then, you know, along with the like all the legislation tied to the healthcare industry, I think that that's going to have a pretty bad impact on them as well. So I think just in general, you're going to see a lot of small services companies end up going out of business. And then that's going to lead to unemployment, which impacts a lot of other things. I don't think that the housing market is really going to go down very much. It'll probably stay relatively the same. It's not, certainly not going to be a big growth area. And then what was the last one that you said? The stock market. I don't think that that's, I think that that'll level off a little bit, but I don't think that it's going to go down.
All right. So I've updated your prediction with a few bullets that kind of captures that. So when we come back next year, we can really measure it correctly.
So what's your next prediction?
My first prediction, since the Swiss Alps bunker one was not going to come true, I think 2018 will be the year of non-institutional startup funding. I think this has already begun. We have seen more and more angel investments coming out. The more I get involved with this, the more I realize the power of money that comes from angels rather than going the traditional institutional route. Jason Calcanis's book, Angel, which came out a few months ago, was really good. I think some people will probably dive into it from there. Crowdfunding, I mean, this is kind of maybe the opposite of my prediction for 2017, but I do think that, you know, crowdfunding will continue to maybe build some steam. And the ICOs are a bit dubious as to whether they'll stick around, but I know that's a big push right now. People are trying to like fund startups using ICOs. So through those three avenues, I think it's going to be even just an even larger, it's going to be easier and even more prevalent and become a more common thing for people to invest in early stage startups. And I think it will be become easier to raise it as a startup, to raise non-institutional funding. And this is, you know, kind of tied to fund strapping a little bit. I think it'll be easier to fund strap because of that. Fund strapping being raising a small round of funding without the intention of the implied Series A, right? Of having to then go to institutional money in 18 months, but to actually become profitable with that initial round.
My next prediction, it kind of revolves around in-app purchases. And one thing that I've heard talk of is about legislating that, mainly because of when Star Wars Battlefront 2 came out, there was complaints about how much the game cost, and then the fact that inside the game, you could go in and you could purchase basically a loot crate, and you had a chance to get certain items, but you were not guaranteed to get something specific. So the rationale that people were putting forward was that, well, that's actually gambling because you're buying a chance to get something that may or may not be valuable, and it is being presented in such a way that that fits the definition of gambling. And I don't think that we're going to see legislation around this. I think that there's a lot of talk about it, but I think that the companies that are behind these types of games are smart enough to be able to avoid that kind of stuff because they've got the legal teams that are there to both defend them and point them in the right direction and say, you should or shouldn't be doing this, and here's what we can get you out of, and here's what we can't. So I don't think that there's going to be any actual legislation around it, but I do think that you're going to see gaming companies come to better definitions, and I would say like be a little bit more careful about how they're putting those offerings together for those in-app purchases.
My second prediction for the year is that artificial intelligence / machine learning will continue to be marketed as the next big thing in terms of like enterprise SaaS and even small and medium-sized SaaS and software, but that once again, it will not deliver in 2018. And by not deliver, what I mean is this is, it's being touted before it can really provide a ton of value for most people or most businesses. One of the big issues is with, especially with machine learning, like you need such large data sets to actually train the algorithms. And I see these like SMB tools saying, we'll use our machine learning to help you do blah, blah, blah. And it's like, that's overpromising. And I think it's going to burn people out on it. I've already had conversations with a guy who used to run, you know, big e-commerce store. And he's like, we've been sold artificial intelligence, you know, for 15 years. And it still doesn't do, still not as smart as just me sitting down and, you know, whatever, building out a funnel or a campaign. And so I think there's danger here of it becoming just complete marketing fodder. I do think that eventually this stuff's going to work and it's going to be genius. And I mean, we use, like, you know, there's examples of it. Like, we use what I would call artificial intelligence to detect spammers when they come in to drip based on behavior. And we have all these signals we look at and we auto flag, and our accuracy is really high. And we've developed that algorithm over the last several years. And I know there are other startups that do this internally. So the stuff can work. There's just certain approaches that you need to take to it. And we have stuff that we're already thinking about inside Drip, like how could we automate this? How could we make this smarter? But it isn't necessarily, people have been saying it for many years. It's not there yet. And I think it will, some people will actually do some intelligent things this year. I think hopefully we will release something, but it's not going to be the promise of, you know, everything's done for you and you just sit back and press one button and all your marketing is essentially automated, which is what so many of people in like the MarTech space are claiming.
Well, I think that's a difference in the bounds of the problem too. So like, for example, detecting that somebody is coming in and going to be sending spam, or it's a fake account that signed up and, you know, that their intent is to do that. Like there's certain patterns that you can recognize very easily because there's only so many things that you can do or that can be done in the app. And you can do timings around like when one request happens versus when another. Like it makes it easier to score that and kind of detect whether or not somebody's doing that versus in an e-commerce store, like how do you predict whether somebody's going to come back and buy something else, or how do you predict the best thing to upsell them to? I think that that's a lot more of an open-ended problem with no real bounds versus is this person going to be a spammer, yes or no? Does that make sense?
Yep, totally does.
So I think that the two things are very different, but I totally agree that like enterprise companies are being sold this type of stuff and it just doesn't work.
Yep. How about you? What's your last prediction?
So my last prediction is actually about Uber, and it is that Uber is not going to regain the ground that they've lost. And I think that Lyft is a lot smaller than they are, but I think that because of all of the, I'll say, political fallout and loss of goodwill towards them, not that they probably had a ton of it to begin with, but I think that they've really lost a lot of the leverage points that they probably had, and they're going to have to work harder to do the same things that they were able to do last year and the year before just because of all the fallout from the allegations of misconduct and all the internal stories that have come out of there about how badly they're treating people. I just don't think that they're going to recover as well as they probably think that they are. And it's, like I said, they're just the big problem is that it's going to take them a lot more effort to do the same things that they were able to do last year with substantially less effort.
When you say not regain the ground they've lost, do you mean in the valuation? Because you know, as of this writing or as of this recording, their valuation is like 30% lower based on a round that they have to raise from SoftBank. Because I guess I think Uber's burning a billion a month. It's a lot of money. Is it that much money?
I don't know.
It's a lot of money. Yeah. So they are in the place of having to raise capital, and with this kind of tarnish on them, and they've lost their CEO. SoftBank offered them like 30% less than the previous round. Are you thinking that in terms of the valuation, or are you thinking in terms of market share? I know we don't know their market share for sure, but you know, there are estimates and such, and they have taken a big time hit with people deleting their app altogether. Which are you thinking?
Yeah, that's more what I'm thinking. Like market share, like because we don't have the actual numbers, it's going to be a little bit difficult to, I'll say, measure that in a year. But I think that when I say that they're not going to regain the ground they've lost, as in like the people who've deleted their app will probably not reinstall it unless they have no other option. And I don't think that they're going to win those people back, even if the company changes its tune and, you know, goes out of its way to I'll say, overhaul their culture. I don't think that they're going to win those people back, which will have an impact on their market share and their ability to grow as a company.
Sounds good. My third prediction is that there will be an enormous crash in Bitcoin's valuation. Right now, it's on a huge rise. But long term, I am still bullish.
Wait, didn't it crash like 3 days ago?
I mean, it crashes every few days, but okay. But it comes back. But I'm saying more of I don't even want to say sustained crash, but you know, if you look back over its history, a couple years ago, it built up into the 400-600 range, and then it crashed, and it was down for like a year, like kind of just fumbling around, maybe even more. It might've been like 18, 24 months where it was just kind of bumping around at around a few hundred. And then, you know, there's this more recent rise. So, I mean, I'm long Bitcoin, right? I own several cryptocurrencies, and not in small quantity either. It's not like I bought one. And so I'm kind of keeping my eye on it, and it's tough. I mean, this is similar to my prediction of, you know, the stock market correction. I think that the way Bitcoin is going up right now is like nothing, no mania that we've ever seen. The volatility is just crazy. And so I do think that the next 12 months, that is likely to end. Now, I of all people would be ecstatic if it didn't, right? If it kept going up, doubling, tripling. Yeah, Bitcoin has had like a 2100% return in the last year. So that's kind of tough, not only to sustain, but even sustain the current valuation. So with that said, long term, I am, even as I sell some of the Bitcoin as it gets really high and my assets get way out of allocation, out of the percentages that I like, I'm certainly not like exiting those positions at all, because I think I'm long Bitcoin and I'm long cryptocurrencies in general. As you look out 5 and 10 years, I think it's kind of like being here at the advent of the personal computer, the advent of the internet, the advent of smartphones. Like, I think Bitcoin and crypto in general is this movement, and long term is going to stick around even after a crash. If you think about the 2000.com crash, there was all this hype around it from 94, from the IPO of Netscape, all the way, or 94, 95, all the way to 2000. And then everything crashed and people said, boy, dot-coms, those internet sites, they'll never amount to anything. And now here we are, right? And it's like the biggest companies in the world essentially have something to do, either came out of that or have something to do with it. And if you had just been long the whole time, you'd have to wait through that, decade-long trough, essentially, when it all dropped out, bottom dropped out of it. And I guess I see there could be a similar kind of frenzy around, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, where there will be a big crash. But long-term, that it will, be a viable either store of value or, way to move money around.
Yeah, I think the volatility of it is what is kind of a big turnoff to me. I saw a tweet earlier today from somebody who said, I bought a USB cable from Newegg with some Bitcoin once. Feel free to ask me sometime and I'll show you a $3,500 USB cable.
Yeah, that's so funny. And that's the thing. Like, oh, that's good. I don't think Bitcoin is a currency. I think cryptocurrency is a misnomer, and I view it much more as a store of value and a way to get money out of situations. I view it more as like gold, right? I wouldn't go and buy bread with gold. I wouldn't go buy a USB cable with gold, and I won't do it with Bitcoin either. But I do believe it's a great way to, if your currency is going crazy, and this happens every several months, to just get money out of my currency, because the government won't allow me to exchange it for US dollars that's much more stable. And I don't want to see, this hyperinflation. Like, people are dumping their money into Bitcoin or into other cryptos. And that it's a great way to, or I shouldn't say great, but it is a way people are using to not lose all the value of their money during these currency crises. And then you look at when Brexit happened and there was this uncertainty, and when there's economic uncertainty, people, there's obviously a lot of volatility in Bitcoin. It's been lucky enough to keep going up, but it's a way that if you had $100,000 in the bank, or I should say 100,000 Argentinian pesos or whatever, and hyperinflation hits and it's 100% a week inflation, you can't go buy $100,000 worth of gold, like it, because everybody goes and buys it and they're trying to get stable assets, right? But you can go buy $100,000 in theory of Bitcoin quickly. And that's been one of the ways that people have seen these big rises.
Do you think that long-term digital currencies will replace gold as like the asset to go put your money in for stability?
No, I think they will coexist, because gold is just, it's just been around too long. It does have a small amount of value in manufacturing, some amount of value in jewelry, but more than that, it's just that we've all agreed that it's worth something. And I don't think anytime soon, everyone's going to agree that it's not, and agree that crypto is. I don't think that's realistic, but I do see it as just another asset to hold. And that's how I, as I did asset allocation, or as I do asset allocation, that's how I have money in all of these things, small amounts divided between them. Although my my cryptocurrency is no longer a small amount. And I kind of laugh, because it's like, it's a good problem to have when it goes up, but it just completely jacks your plans when you're like, oh, I don't actually want to own, I don't want that much of my net worth to be tied up, in something that's this volatile. With that, my fourth and final prediction is that cryptocurrencies will be regulated by several large governments. There's already been statements from the US government about what Bitcoin is, but there's no like SEC oversight of Bitcoin exchanges. There's a bunch of regulation that could be in place. I don't know that it'll happen in the US government. I know it's happening in some kind of smaller governments, but I think that this will be the year where governments really start stepping up and putting legislation or at least more regulation in place to kind of get involved with cryptocurrencies and get out ahead of it, to make sure that for whatever reason they pass regulation, they'll be doing that. I think they probably would have done it this year, but large governments move slowly. And I think they're all waiting to kind of see what happens. And since I don't think it's going away anytime soon, I think this will be the year that the things really ramp up.
I wonder if any of that legislation is going to be based around like security standards for, because like banks have security standards that they have to comply to. And like, there's been no shortage of stories of like, you know, these cryptocurrency sites that have gotten hacked and they lose like millions or tens of millions of dollars. So I can totally see somebody, some government agency coming out and saying, hey, in order to be able to trade in whatever the digital currency is, you have to follow certain security standards in order to be able to do it. But I think it's going to take them a few years in order to be able to nail down exactly what those are. They'll sit in there in a committee for like a year or two at least before they kind of get to any sort of concrete implementation guidelines.
Yep. And you don't know, you know, when they're first announced, it'll probably be this, it might be a big negative hit to Bitcoin and the crypto valuations of like, oh no, government's going to get involved. And then long-term, it could feasibly be, make it more stable. It could make it less likely to get stolen from marketplaces. It's hard to predict what it will do. I think there'll be mixed reactions to it.
Yeah, it depends on whether they legislate it as or decide to back it as if they do like a bank transaction. Because with banks, it's federally insured versus Bitcoin, it's not. So if it's a digital currency and it all gets stolen, is the government going to step in and say, we will back this up to $250,000 or whatever? But my suspicion is no, they're not going to go down that path.
So that wraps us up for today. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from our Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. So this is the after show, the part that we ask you not to tweet about, and it doesn't exist. And if you happen to stumble onto it, consider yourself part of the Startups for the Rest of Us inner circle. Mike, did you hear about the guy who had mined a bunch of Bitcoin in the early days, and he had it on a hard drive that got thrown away years ago? And it's now would be, he remembered how much he had, and it would be worth like, I forget what it is, $15 billion or something. And he has a crew. He's hiring a crew of heavy equipment because he knows what landfill it's in, and he's going to try to dig it up and find it. I read about this. It's crazy.
Are you serious?
That would be, tell me that would not be so painful.
That's the, what's even more painful would be if he actually found the hard drive and then it was damaged beyond repair.
It was corrupted. Yep. If he spent all that money, or I mean, if he doesn't find it, either way, it's just like to the agony of knowing that you had, that you would be set for life in a way that like no one is, you know?
The thing is like, if you're in a situation like that, I'm sure you could find some investor who'd be willing to gamble like $100,000 or $200,000
exactly.
on getting the equipment and putting it together and, you know, funding the operation. And if it doesn't, if you don't find it, then they get nothing. But, you know, it's because that's really a gamble. Like you're hoping that you can find it.
That's right.
But
it's a venture, right? It's kind of like the treasure hunters are the guys who go after like sunken ships, and they basically raise funding, you know, from investors to go find them, and with the hopes that A, they will find the ship, and B, that they can, you know, find treasure in it from pirates from years ago.
You know, that reminds me of, you know, did you ever watch the show Ghost Hunters?
No, but I've
ever hear about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I always thought it would be very entertaining to have that show taped and then like a year or two later, then come out with a new show called The People Who Screw with Ghost Hunters. And it's the pre-episodes of like the people who went into the house and set up stuff to screw with the people who went in to actually do the ghost hunting and show how they like faked all the stuff. I always thought that'd be an interesting way to do it. But of course, you'd have to kind of screw over the people who are actually the ghost hunters.
That's what I was saying. Was the stuff faked? Or
no, I'm just saying that would be interesting.
I don't know the premise.
I think it would be interesting if they had actually done that. I think the ghost hunters, they portrayed it all as being real. I've never like sat down and watched an episode. I've caught like little clips here and there, but it's all about like haunted houses and, you know, weird things that happen that they catch on tape, or they say that they saw something, and, you know, there's video and audio and stuff. But I think that it would be cool if they had they deliberately set up these houses to send people in advance in an effort to screw with them, and then send the ghost hunters in and let them do their thing.
Well, hey, I don't have much time, but I wanted to talk about the Netflix show Daredevil that I just watched season 2 of. So season 1, are you familiar with Daredevil? Did you read the comics ever?
I'm familiar with Daredevil, but I don't think I read the comics too much. I definitely haven't seen the Netflix series.
The Netflix show? Okay. So it's 2 seasons, and the first one is more about the arc. I'm not going to spoil too much, but it's like, you know, you learn about Daredevil and you see him. He's a blind lawyer, and he develops, you know, he's a superhero. And then the main character, or kind of the main villain in that series, or in the first season, is Wilson Fisk, who is the Kingpin. And he was a very, you know, arch nemesis in the comics. And then season 2, there's an arc with Elektra and an arc with the Punisher. And so I've watched them both. And I would say if you're into superhero stuff, dark, it's very dark, and it's a lot of hand-to-hand combat, and it's gory. Yeah, I would say it's a little gory. It's not as gory as Walking Dead, but it's really well done. Like, it's really good show. It's a lot of action. So if you don't like action stuff, you know, don't watch this. But if you are into superhero stuff and you're looking for it, especially, I liked the first season. It's a bit of a slow burn for several episodes, and then it gets good 5-6 episodes in. And then with the second season, all the Punisher stuff I loved. And the Punisher, you know, was always one of my favorite Marvel characters, along with Wolverine. And they do a really good job portraying the Punisher. He's actually the guy. Do you ever watch Walking Dead?
We watched a couple of seasons of it, but I think we lost interest, I think, around season 3 or 4.
So Shane from the first season plays the Punisher, and he looks, there's a spitting image of him. And then the Elektra, I really didn't like the Elektra storyline. I was kind of bored by it, but all things told, I think they did a really good job, and I kind of look forward to the next season.
Awesome. Well, I don't think we have time for it, but I think I've been reading The Expanse, and it's a series on the Sci-Fi Channel, but we can talk about that next time.
You've been reading it or watching it?
Well, I started watching it on the Sci-Fi Channel, and it deviated far enough from the books that I just, like, I couldn't watch it. And it was honestly, like, the first season is kind of boring, but I'm on, like, the fourth book at this point, so.
I've heard a lot about it, and I'd like to hear. Next time, maybe we'll just spoil it, because I'm probably not going to watch it, but I want to hear more about the plot and the premise, you know, and to, like, you can kind of talk through. And if we decide to spoil it, we'll couch that in advance so people don't accidentally listen to it.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, sir. Talk to you later.
Bye.